Hello and welcome to Talking Spirits Podcast, episode number 30. Today, I'm really happy to welcome my first guest on the show from Poland. I met Julia Zions many years ago. I think we hooked up on Facebook. Back then, I didn't even realize that Julia was a singer. About a year ago, I saw a post of Julia's, I think it was on Facebook again, announcing that her band Krivadrina has released its first album. Curious as I am, I listened to it, loved it very much, and since then our connection intensified. So it's a huge pleasure to have Julia as my guest, and we are discussing her love towards the languages, culture and traditional music of the Balkans, the so far history of Krivadrina, the difference between an artist and an entertainer, the political situation in Poland, and much more. We really enjoyed the conversation a lot, so we hope you will enjoy it as well, and I will be talking to you again at the end of the episode. Hi, Julia.
Hi, Armin.
Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's a huge pleasure to have you. I'm very grateful that you are taking the time to be my guest. And yeah, we are living in quite a complex time, so to say, right now. And yeah, how are you today and how are you dealing with everything which is happening in the world these days?
Well, today I'm fine. It's been a good day, quite a regular one, I would say. But yeah, the times are not regular at all. And I agree with you on that. How I deal with it. I try to be grateful for all the good things that happen. I try not to panic, even if the situation gets overwhelming. I still try to distance myself, not to the point of, you know, being indifferent, not to the point of ignoring like the bad things that happen, but rather by not allowing them to get to me too much. And yeah, I focus on the good things, try to spend as much time as I can with the people I love. I try to seek refuge in music from all the bad things. And yeah, I try to be grateful. I try to look for some kindness in the world and just, you know, move on with my things.
My outlook is pretty similar. And I think, yeah, it might not be easy at times, but it works. And it's basically the only thing we can do. You are a singer. So how did music come into your life?
Gradually, I would say. I basically come from a completely non-musical family. Of course, like people listen to music and everyone likes it, but no one really is so obsessed with it or you know, doing it in any way. So the first memory I have that music really played a very important part in my life was singing Christmas carols with my grandpa. I was very little. And we were sitting together by the window, you know, in winter, at Christmas time, and Polish Christmas carols are really beautiful. And he used to sing them to me and teach me some. So this is like the earliest memory I have with music that really warms my heart. And, but then, I don't know, I never really thought that I will ever become a musician. It was just somewhere near me, but it was never a part of my life. Then suddenly at the age of 17, I think I decided to learn how to sing. I mean, I wanted to try music because I really liked listening to it. I liked how it made me feel. So I was thinking how about trying to do it myself. Then I had to pick an instrument, and then I thought that maybe actually singing wouldn't be such a bad idea, because I always wanted to have my instrument with me, and it was like, you know, the perfect the perfect scenario for that. I signed up for some music school for kids in my hometown. And I started learning. Then, I don't know, I wanted actually to study acting, but it didn't work out. But as a part of preparation for, you know, for the exams, entry exams for the theater academy, I had to learn to sing, like voice emission and everything. But still, it was such an abstract idea for me that I could really do it, like, you know, for real, like first, like seriously. Then I started studying something else, started studying Croatian and Serbian language and literature. And then music re-entered my life because I got to know music from former Yugoslavia, which I completely fell in love with. And it made it gave me like new motivation, you know, to sing and to live with music all the time. And it took me some time to gather enough self-confidence and to become brave enough to actually try and go, you know, go on stage, join a band, do something about it. But it's been a couple of years now, and it's becoming more and more an integral part of my life, actually. So it's still in progress, I would say. And I cannot tell you one particular moment when it started. It's been a constant, you know, process and progress in my case.
I think it's a lifelong journey in some way, right?
Yeah.
But while I was listening to what you said, I had one thought, because, like, you know, observing so many musicians who I got to play with or who I got to meet in my life, and also from my own experience, you know, becoming a bassist at a very young age, I somehow think that, you know, with the people who really are in music for the love of music and for the passion, somehow, you know, the instrument they choose or the role they choose to have, like, let's say, in a band, it's always connected to their personality. You told me about how you started singing, but do you know what I mean when I say this? Like, you know, I think, for instance, when I was a kid, I was singing too, and I even won a singing competition, but wow. I would never be a singer because it's just not my place to be, you know? Do you think there's something, some connection between your choice being a vocalist to your personality?
What I can notice or what I can say, being a vocalist is also very much about using words and, you know, connecting not only with notes, not only with sounds, but also with words. And it's always been a very important thing to me. I've always been in love with literature and with poetry and also learning foreign languages. So the power of language, the power of words has always fascinated me. So this is a way to combine it. I know it's not quite about my personality, rather about some preferences or some other passions that I have. But yeah, for sure. I mean, also it's a way of expressing that really fulfills me. I mean, when I sing, I really can express emotions I couldn't express otherwise.
Yeah, so it makes a lot of sense. And I mean, yeah, that's when I listen to you sing or when I see you, that's the feeling which I have. But I just wanted to ask to hear it from your perspective. You know, you just mentioned that you love music from traditional music from the Balkans, and especially from what used to be Yugoslavia. Could you say something about how this did start for you?
Yeah, sure. It started actually even before I went to university. It was back in time when internet wasn't, you know, I mean, we all already had it, but there wasn't so much content, and the exchange of music that we have now wasn't possible. So no YouTube, no Spotify, no anything. So I think the first contact I had with the music from former Yugoslavia was at the Eurovision Song Contest that I used to watch with my parents. And I think it, you know, it corresponds. You may laugh, but but it actually corresponds to with the basic idea of the contest, to have different, you know, people from different countries across Europe to be able to listen to the music of other guys, you know, other countries. So this is how it worked for me, even when I was a kid. And somehow, always from all of the songs, all of the content there, I somehow always liked the ex-Yugoslavian entries the most. So I started digging a little bit. Then I think in high school, I discovered Yugoslav New Wave by accident. I was like reading some article, Googling some stuff, and then suddenly I came across this. So I discovered some bands. I started listening to them. I liked it. Then I started listening to Goran Bregovic, who is very popular in Poland because he recorded an album with a very popular Polish singer, Kaya. They recorded an album together. So basically, he's very well known in Poland right now. So that was the very beginning. But then when I went to the university, when I started studying languages and cultures of these countries, I also started discovering other artists, also through my partner who comes from ex-Yugoslavia. He also, you know, gave me a few hints on some bands, some musicians. So that was the second, I would say, the second wave for me. And then the more I knew, of course, the more I started discovering on my own and just exploring. And I keep exploring until now. So I'm not done.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's so funny, you know, because when you mentioned the Eurovision Song Contest, I can, of course, understand. But what's actually very sad about the Eurovision Song Contest is that we mostly don't get to see the real valuable things, you know. So it's,
that's true. Yeah,
I mean, there's exceptions, of course, but you know what I mean. I mean, you are actually practically singing songs in Bosnian, Serbian, Croatian, whatever we want to name it, and you are doing it pretty authentically.
Thank you.
For one thing, this kind of music is, especially the traditional stuff, is quite challenging for a singer. You know, just the technical aspects of it and the emotional aspect of it. And then there's another thing which you already mentioned is, you know, you have also to be able to master the language. Yeah, so it would be interesting to know, you know, how you approach it. For instance, when you learn a song or when you write.
Well, first I focus on the emotion. That is always the starting point for me. And on the lyrics, on the story behind this particular song, what feelings does it describe, but also what feelings does it, you know, does it make me feel? So this is my starting point. And yeah, I definitely focus on the melody, on the melodic aspect as well. And then I try to, well, then from the vocal point of view, I of course try to analyze what is the trick behind this particular emission, because of course, like, different countries, different region, different genres, they all have their own characteristics. And I try to listen and learn first by imitating. So of course, I don't want to sound like I don't want to imitate anyone. In the end, I want to, you know, have my own voice and my own expression. But when it comes purely to the voice emission, I need to gather some things, some tricks from the singer that I learn it from, so that I originally hear it from. I always also try to listen to different versions. If, for example, there are some traditional songs that have been interpreted by many different artists, so I always try to listen to at least several versions by different vocalists to compare, but also not to be stuck with just one way of doing it, because each one of them had their own way of interpreting, their own voice, their own way to tell the same. So it's the same story, but it was told differently by different artists. And obviously, I want to tell it my way, but I want also to get inspired by the way they did it.
Yeah.
So this is it. I also, if I have a chance to attend some workshops with musicians that specialize in these particular genres, I always try to do it. This is also a great, always a great lesson to be able to learn directly from people who do that, who specialize in that, and who can, you know, share their knowledge with me. It's very precious.
Yeah. Yeah, and how about the language part? I mean, you mentioned that you studied the languages, but I mean, I could ask you, you know, what made you go that path?
So as I already told you, I wasn't accepted to the theater academy. I wanted to try again in 1 year, and I figured that, okay, I need to sign up for some other studies in the meantime. So it was a backup plan, actually. That turned out to be the greatest life plan, but you know, but back back in the day, it was a backup plan. So I thought, if I sign up for other studies, if I resign after a year, I have nothing. But if I resign after 1 year of language studies, I will have already mastered the language to a certain level. So, and a language is always a treasure. So if I manage to spend this 1 year to learn a language that I like, even if I leave after a year, I don't leave with nothing. So that was my main motivation and why I chose particularly this path. I was back then very much fascinated with my Slavic origin and heritage. And I was really fascinated how, you know, all Slavic cultures are somehow connected and have the same roots and how we are all similar but different. And with former Yugoslavia, it was even more because, you know, we are still quite far away from each other, geographically speaking, but also culturally speaking. So it was very familiar and very different at the same time. And it's really what fascinated me. And main reason why I decided to choose this path. And after the year, I loved it already so much that I didn't want to even try again, you know, for the acting studies. I found my place, literally and figuratively. So.
Yeah, cool. But would you say, like, you know, as you are a person who's able to speak several languages, like, very well, did this fact change anything for you in your life?
Yeah, definitely. As I said, for me, every language is a treasure and a tool that opens new doors because it helps you connecting with people on an entirely different level and it opens you the doors to different cultures. And it also, I don't know, for me personally, it really helped me to open my mind for other cultures, other people, other backgrounds, and it enabled me to get to know, you know, more than it definitely opened some doors for me. It showed me some new horizons in terms of different countries, different cultures, as I say. And it's a great feeling to be able to communicate with, you know, with people and to connect with people. So it's also very comfortable sometimes. It's just, even from pragmatic reason, you know, if you travel and you are able to really deal with almost every situation because you know the language, it's super comfortable. But also on this higher level of just getting to know people, connecting with people, and understanding their background, understanding their culture, it's really priceless.
The language, of course, always transports you know, not just that what you want to say or what you are listening to when somebody's talking to you, but also, you know, it's a means of transport for the way of life people are living, I think, you know. And for me, I also think it has changed the way how I think and how I feel.
It's actually scientifically proven that when people are bilingual or multilingual, when they change the language they use at the moment, it automatically changes their way of thinking because it's so interconnected that, of course, it's not like you become a completely different person with a different personality, but it definitely changes some things that, you know, some ways that that your brain takes at the moment.
We could talk about this for a long time, I guess, because it's really deep and it happens on so many. But what I also like, you know, for me, very interesting, also just within one language, like let's say German or even Serbo-Croatian, Bosnian, I find it very interesting to explore like the little regional differences and stuff, you know. And not only that, but also the question how a language is developing within, like, how it's developing over time. Like, for instance, in Germany now, when you hear young people talking, there are so many different influences which are there now, which have not been there like 30 years ago when I learned German, when I came here. So I find this very fascinating, you know, to observe and notice like the little things, you know. It's amazing.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, you mentioned traveling. So I'm sure you have been traveling to countries of what used to be Yugoslavia. So how would you describe the experiences you made there on your travels?
In one word, amazing. But if I'm supposed to elaborate on that a little bit, so I've been there several times. I've spent I try to travel at least once a year, either to Croatia or Bosnia or Serbia. They're like the countries I visit the most. I've been also to Belgrade for one semester on a student exchange. So it was like a longer experience. Of course, it's very helpful if you can stay somewhere long enough to explore the culture more. And every time I'm there, it feels like home, actually. I mean, I don't want to invite myself or to impose myself, but I must say it really feels like home, and the attitude of the people I meet there, their hospitality and kindness, and the way, I mean, how friendly and open they are, I really love it, really. And I am aware, and I feel sometimes or hear or understand the more dark, dramatic backgrounds of, you know, of these countries, of this region. And I never ignore it. I'm always very mindful of that and respectful for it. And it breaks my heart sometimes to listen to some stories and to witness or listen to some stories, some things. But still, I think this is a very unique part of the world that needs to be protected and cherished, because the people there, the culture, the music, I don't know, the feeling you have when you just come there as an outsider or half outsider because you speak the language, but you're still an outsider, but the way you are welcomed, it's amazing. And it really feels like a second home for me.
That's very nice to hear. And of course, I agree with, you know, what you said. But at the same time, this is something I was thinking about a lot, you know, because it's a very paradox, you know, on the one hand, the hospitality and the vibe, and, you know, and then on the other hand, like 30 years ago, we fucking killed each other. It's something for me with my, you know, with my background and my story, it's something I'm thinking about still. And it's very hard to get those two together, you know, it's like, I have not come to any conclusions on this, but it's very hard to combine those two, you know?
Yeah, I know what you mean. And I've been wondering the same, actually. I wouldn't even try to answer this question, because I know, I am aware that even after so many years of living somehow inside of this, or at the verge of this culture and knowing the people and everything, I know I will never truly understand and comprehend what happened without, you know, having experienced it.
Yeah.
So I try to be, I mean, I am compassionate about it and I do my best to understand, but I know I will never be able to understand it.
Yeah, because you can't, if, you know, I can, yeah. Like, even for me who has experienced it, it took a lot of time, like many, many years to understand some things. And I don't even know. I mean, I could tell you, or maybe I already did tell you some, you know, stories how which I experienced in the 90s. But I mean, I can tell you about it. I can report to you, but really describe the feeling, it's impossible. And I like to say, I really hope that none of us would have to experience something like this ever again. I mean, it's happening everywhere in the world, or it's at any time it's happening. But it's something, you know, it's not possible to really transfer it. Yeah, but we have a different means, like music, which is way more beautiful and more powerful also, I think. Yeah, and together with some other musicians from Krakow in Poland, you founded the band Kriva Drina.
Yes.
How did the band come together? And, you know, because I have to precise a little bit, because actually, you know, it's not that common that some guys from Poland decide they would do a band which plays this kind of music. And of course, you have you have already talked about your personal connection to it. But from there, it's, you know, to find other people who are on the same page in some way. So can you please talk about the band?
Yeah, of course. Actually, how we came together, it was a little bit of a coincidence, like very lucky coincidence, or fate, if you prefer.
I would prefer fate.
Yeah. So it was definitely fate's doing. I was really looking or dreaming about having a band like this for quite some time. And together with one friend that is on the band as well, we went to some singing workshops, Balkan traditional songs singing workshop here in Poland, not so far from Krakow. And there we met a guy also from Krakow, a guitarist who participated in the same workshop because he was interested in this kind of music. So after we came back, not without any obstacles, but after some time, after another lucky coincidence or fate, we managed to meet for a couple of rehearsals, and it actually went into a very good direction. So we started also looking for some other guys to join. Some of them were people we used to collaborate with before on some other projects. And some of them joined just by another coincidence. So, for example, like the most funny story, I think, is with our percussionist, Mikołaj. We had another drummer in the band, and before our very first concert, so like the very first premiere concert of Krivadrina. And 2 hours before we are supposed to get on stage, our percussionist calls us and says she has some very difficult family situation and she cannot come. So our violinist, Paola, called her boyfriend back then. Now he's her husband. But back then, she called her boyfriend, to who also played percussion instruments, if he's free that evening and if he could come and help us out, you know, and like play as backup for that girl. And he really arrived, like 1 hour before the concert, he arrived. No rehearsal ever. And he played the whole concert with us. And after that, when it turned out that the other percussionist cannot stay because of her situation, we immediately asked him, hey, do you want to play with us like forever? Because it really worked great. So this is just one example how crazy and unforeseen the circumstances were on how some members joined. But all of us have some connection to this music. So the girls, Paola and Magda, they also studied Serbian and Croatian. And the other guys came into, you know, get the connection with this music in different ways, by traveling there, by listening to music, just by being curious about it, by working on some other projects as well. So each of us has their own connection, but we managed to put it all together and create something together.
Yeah, and I think it's beautiful, you know. Can you talk about the name and tell me why you chose this name for the band, and maybe explain what it's up to, you know, because it's actually very funny.
Yeah, sure. So there is this expression in Serbian, Bosnian, Croatian, ispravljati krivadrina, and so like trying to change something that cannot be changed. And I always liked it very much, the expression and how it sounded. And also, I really love the Drina River. I mean, I think it's the most beautiful, or one of the most beautiful rivers I've seen in my life. So the color, the water, the mountains around, I don't know, I cannot even describe it, but if someone can be in love with a river, then I'm definitely in love with Drina. So it also played a very important part. And one of my favorite books is also Nadrini Čuprija, so the bridge over Drina, I think it's in English, by Ivo Andrić. So it all came together somehow, and when we were thinking about the name for the band, I actually came up with this one. I explained to the guys, and some of them knew the expression already, and they agreed. So this is how it happened.
Yeah, I think it's wonderful, and it fits, you know, it fits to the way you play and you sing. I think in fall of last year, you guys released your debut album.
Yes.
What happened since then?
Oh, since then we were mostly mostly playing concerts, playing gigs. We were trying to promote the album. It's our first, so we had to learn a little bit, you know, on the marketing side, I would say, of things, because this is always the difficult part, because you get so excited about making music and recording music, and then you record the album, and then you release it, and then what? And you suddenly have to think, okay, but how do we, you know, how we do we do it that it actually reaches people, reaches the audience? So of course, on one hand, we focused on playing the concerts. On the other hand, we were trying to, you know, figure it out how promotion in social media works, and how we can, you know, how else can we make ourselves visible to the audience, and how can we make sure that our album gets to, you know, to some people and get listened to. That was the task back then. But still, we focused mostly on playing live, because this is what gives us the most, this is the most exciting part, and this is really what gets us going, and this is what makes us happy.
Actually, this kind of music needs to be experienced live. And now that you mentioned concerts and playing live, in July, so not too long ago, you guys were able to play at the Rudolstadt Festival. And for those who don't know about it, Rudolstadt Festival is the biggest and most prestigious German festival for what is referred to as world music. And it's also one of the biggest in Europe. So actually quite a good thing, I would say, for a band which just started basically not too long ago. So how was this experience for you guys?
It was absolutely amazing and fantastic. We are very grateful that we could, be a part of it, because the event itself, the atmosphere, the way it was organized, and everything was just perfect. And of course, it was a great experience for us. Very, very nice one. We got to spend some time together at the festival, so that was great. We got to experience something new, because it was the first time we played abroad. So outside of Poland, it was also very exciting for us. We got to know wonderful audience at Rudolstadt, because really I was amazed by how well the audience was responding, and how open they were, and how much energy they gave back. Actually, it was really great. So as far as Rudolstadt is concerned, we loved, and I think I can speak for the whole band, we loved every minute of it.
This is what you just said. This is what's really special about this particular festival, that you have so many people coming together from so many different parts of Germany or Europe or the world, and also so many different musicians, and that actually everybody is just having a great time.
Definitely. And apart from performing ourselves, which was a great experience, I also appreciated the chance to listen to some other musicians. I enjoyed other concerts also very, very much.
Yeah, and I enjoyed, you had two performances, of which I was able to see the second one, and I enjoyed it a lot. So for everybody who's listening to our conversation, if you get the chance to see Rivalrina, you should go. I would recommend.
Thank you for recommending us.
No, but I'm serious. I mean, it's really beautiful. So up to now, if I'm informed correctly, you are not a full-time musician, by which I mean that you are working in another line of work to make a living.
That's correct.
So is it your goal to change this?
Yeah, one day I would definitely like to, to become a full-time musician. Although I must say I really like my job. I finally found one that makes me happy, because before I did some corporate jobs and they, well, just to say, not to say too much, but they didn't always make me very happy, or even they make me quite tired and frustrated. The job I have now is really great, and I'm not saying it just in case my boss is listening to it. I really mean it. So but still, it, even if I like my regular job, it doesn't give me as much happiness and satisfaction as music does. So my end goal and my big dream is to become a full-time musician. Yes.
Yeah. Yes, and I mean, I can, as we already have talked privately a lot, I can only confirm you in this, because I think it's worth it, and it's very much possible, in my opinion, as well. But at the same time, it's good what you just said. It's good if you have the situation where the job you do is giving you pleasure, and it's you have a good time doing it, because then you're not under any pressure to force the goal of having a professional career in music. Also, you know, from there makes me think about something else, which is kind of connected. And this is like, you know, having the urge to create art and express yourself in an artistic way is a very different approach from, you know, from the one of being an entertainer in the first place. And sometimes those two can go together, but very often they actually don't. So could you share your perspective on this? Like,
Yeah, I think, I fully agree with you that it can go together, but sometimes it doesn't. The two aspects don't go together so well. As I already said at the beginning, what's most important for me are the emotions and the stories that we tell as musicians, not only singers, because you can tell a story also
everybody
with your instrument.
Yeah.
But this is the most important thing to me. Maybe I look at it too much through my own perspective, through my own lens. But whenever I go to a concert, I don't always look for entertainment. I appreciate if the band can make me jump and laugh and dance and sing with them, and you know, but this is a different kind of experiencing music, which I like, which is not the most important for me, because the concert I remember the most, and that the songs that stayed with me the longest, and the performances that stayed with me the longest and really made me feel, and in, like, you know, emotions I cannot even describe, were not the ones that you would describe as entertaining ones. So if we understand entertainment as actually, you know, playing energetic music to, you know, make people dance and enjoy it, sure, it's nice, it's great, and I think some people really need it, especially, as we already said, the times are difficult and sometimes you just want to forget everything and, you know, go out there and dance and have fun, and it's perfectly fine. And if these emotions are genuine, it's also beautiful. But I don't think it's necessary, or that it's the only way to do it, you know. For me, I don't know. Emotions and stories. This is is the most important thing for me.
Yeah, and you know, I can relate so much, because basically I'm happy that you said it. It's not just, you cannot only tell a story by singing. And from my point of view, actually, you know, this is the biggest chance any musician will ever have, the chance to tell his or her story. And we can do that by any means available in music. I think we are pretty much on the same page, you know, when this is concerned. And of course, there's so many aspects to it. We could talk just about this. We could talk for an hour now.
Oh, yeah.
But I was just interested to find out, you know, your perspective. Because it's, yeah, maybe it's also something which, you know, a decision which needs to be taken at some point. Or I don't know. I mean, it's different for everyone. And I would also say, you know, it's not, I mean, I have my perspective, but it's only for me. It's only valid for myself. But I think it's good if we look for the company of those who have similar perspectives or similar feelings towards it.
Yeah. Maybe one thing If I may add, I like being an entertainer in terms of connecting with the audience. So I definitely, you know, like connecting and making people laugh, making people feel, saying things that, you know, cause a reaction and just really having this sort of connection. So if you interpret that as entertainment, then yes, I'm all in. But when it comes to music itself, I don't think entertainment, like in the way we usually understand it, is the most important thing.
I agree to 100%. Being a musician and a singer, when I think about myself, it was always like, you know, that I, and still it didn't change, I always used to have some dreams, you know, things I dreamed about, for instance, to play with somebody, or, you know, do you have anything like it when you think about yourself in music? Do you have, are there things which you are dreaming of or you wish for you to happen in the future?
Absolutely. So I dream, or I actually plan. It's not even a dream. It's a plan to learn to play an instrument well enough to, you know, to be able to accompany myself. And to become a little bit more independent when it comes to making music and to playing. Also, I would like to focus on songwriting more. I would like to learn to do it better and to do it more often, to be more creative when it comes to this. But these are more plans. They are not dreams, because this is actually something I can work on, and I do. When it comes to dreams, I have a list of musicians in my head with whom I would love to play together on one stage, and with whom I would love to collaborate. And I'm
name some.
Okay, so I'm not saying it only because you are the host of this podcast, but you are one of them.
I would say this will happen definitely.
And yes, you know that I'm generally a fan of Royal Street Orchestra, and this is actually how we got in touch in the first place. So you know, if there was a chance to collaborate with you guys, that would be definitely a dream come true. There are also some other people, but maybe I won't mention them because, you know.
Okay. Yeah, but I mean, even if you don't mention it, I think it's important, and we have talked about it privately as well. Mm-hmm. It's important for us to have this kind of feelings and thoughts in our hearts and minds, because basically, you know, I mean, I have made the experience that this type of stuff, it can get real when time is right for it. So I can only, you know, encourage everyone to dream. And imagine things which are not realistic maybe at all. But when the intention is pure, you know, when it's coming from respect and love towards music, then chances are, when you put in the work additionally, chances are that things will happen. I'm very confident in this. And as far as we are concerned, I think it's very realistic. You know.
Sounds good. I'm looking forward. Yeah. And also what you said, it's a beautiful message, and I fully agree to that, and thank you for spreading such a message. And it's also important to me also to hear it from someone else, because I am a dreamer. I definitely am a dreamer, but I think all of us need to hear something like this from somebody else from time to time.
Yeah, I think so. And I mean, I can share that message because it's coming from my experience. But also, if you you know, if you take it from another perspective, think about the people you love and respect, the musicians you love and respect the most, or like people who are really successful, who made big things happen. Basically, it's good to realize that everybody starts at zero. Mm. You know, everybody starts little and with nothing, basically. You know, most people do. And I think in order to get anywhere, it starts with what we can imagine. It really starts with our imagination. And as I just said, like, yeah, I think when the intention is pure and true, there's actually no limits to what, you know, what can be achieved. So maybe for a little moment, we take another we take a detour from music, let's say, because as you are the first guest on this show who's coming from Poland, which I find very beautiful, you know, to have so many people from so many different countries and places on this show, I would like to talk to you a little bit about Poland. And similar as Yugoslavia, Poland has been a communist country for a very long time. Did you, when you were a little kid, did you experience any effects of this, like during your childhood?
Not directly, because I was actually born the moment the communism was falling apart. So I didn't experience the communist times. I know them mostly from the stories I hear from my parents and some other family members and people from their generation. I do remember that when I was a very, very little kid, it was still, well, compared to now, it was still, you know, challenging in terms of the standard of living or the things you could or could not buy in shops. Like the variety of products was nothing compared to what we have now. And I vaguely remember all these things as a very little kid, but then things started actually going very well for Poland. So all in all, I must say, in terms of the political and economical situation, the time of my childhood was actually very comfortable.
I understand. Yeah, but you know, if we look at Poland nowadays, of course, I'm observing it from the distance which I have by living in Germany. But so correct me if I'm wrong, but you know, like Jaroslaw Kaczyński and his right-wing and very conservative PiS, is it correct? The pronunciation PiS party, they have been in power now for a very long time already. And actually, you know, what I think very often, like, you know, a country which has been under communist rule for so long, one should think that, you know, people would be voting for liberal and open-minded ways of building a society. But as we can witness, I mean, not only in Poland, but actually in many countries in Europe and all around the world, maybe during the last 10 or 15 years, you know, the opposite is the case. Very often people go for, you know, they don't go for the liberal ways, and they go for very often, you know, the populistic way of politics is on the rise. And so how would you describe from your point of view the situation in Poland right now?
Mm-hmm. So you're absolutely right about the right-wing domination and tendencies, and I think the reason, like, there, of course, the reasons are complex, but on one hand, it is a sort of a trend we observe in entire Europe, as you said, or not only in Europe, also in the United States, it was
Brazil
is the case. But I think the reason, one of the reasons, one of the main reasons why it looks like this in Poland, it's definitely the role and the influence of the Catholic Church, which is very, very influential and very powerful, also politically. So, of course, in the Polish Constitution, there is a statement about, you know, the separation,
the division between state and church.
But it's just in theory, you know. In practice, it doesn't. It's non-existent. So the church has a lot of political power, and it actually dates back to communist times, because in the communist times, it was the church, it was the Pope, the Polish Pope, who actually said, like, fought against communism. So this is when people really started, you know, believing the church, and when the church got to a very strong position also on the political scene. And it's been like this ever since. And this is why, so the ruling party has very strong ties with the church, with the church officials. And this is one of the fundamentals on which they built their political power. and also some other aspects that actually caused the return to some very conservative ideas worldwide. The same, or especially in Europe, the same reasons also influenced Poland, because when peace won the last election, it was the time of the refugee crisis.
And yeah,
of
course, 2015, people, I think, right?
Yeah, people were afraid, you know, the atmosphere of endangerment and, you know, the atmosphere of fear was very present. So in such cases, people rather tend to vote for politicians who offer them stability and, you know, like closed borders, safe country, whatnot. And this was also one of the reasons why they did what they did. Now they have access, of course, to the national media, which is, I'm sorry, I don't want to get very political, but since you asked about my personal opinion, so what was going on the public media in Poland, it's a circus. So it's, you know, it's propaganda bullshit, pardon my French. It's really, they have now many tools to actually brainwash people, to convince people that they are the best and they are the only option, and they are feeding the fears of people. Like, you know, if some values promoted by the Catholic Church and by peace, if these values are abolished, then there is no more hope for Polish nation, because this is our fundament, etc., etc. It's also, there's also a lot of hate speech against certain groups. There's a lot of hate speech against the LGBT community, which is also, yeah, it's just, you know, providing some, I don't know, cheap enforcement for the people who are conservative. This is sort of dragging them to their side by creating some sort of ideological war in the society, because obviously people who are more liberal and people who are more progressive in their views, they don't want this and they want to fight this. And also the abortion law that they introduced, and everything that's going on in terms of minorities' rights and women's rights and human rights. So of course there is a huge part of society that wants to, you know, to fight for these rights and for this cause. So we are basically in a constant state of ideological war within the nation, which is sad.
Yes, very much so. But you know what I find very hard to understand is, like, I mean, it's not what I'm saying now is no news, but one thinks very often, I mean, it's similar in like Bosnia or Serbia, Croatia. I mean, those people, they have experienced like a very dramatic and tragic war, you know, where so many people died, so many were displaced, and even like close to 30 years after the war finished, the war's finished, everybody's still voting for the fucking nationalists. And I'm like, okay, but how is it possible that we are not able to learn from history, you know, even after having experienced it yourself? And of course, as you said in the beginning, I mean, it's a very complex conglomerate of many different levels on which it's playing out, but still very hard to understand. But I would like to ask you a very naive question, you know, connected to this. What do you think, you know, what would need to happen for this to change? I mean, even if you take just Poland, like where you are at home.
I think people would need to realize all the negative things, all the bad things that this party and this government is causing. Actually, now Poland is in a very bad economical situation because of several factors. It all started with COVID, then the war in Ukraine, and other things that happen in the world at the moment. And I think people started, some people, I hope, at least some people started realizing that the politics of this and economics of this government are not safe for the country, because they just, you know, they introduce some social programs, which I'm absolutely a fan of social programs, if they are smart and if they are really targeted at the communities in need. But what the government does, they basically buy votes by giving people money, and then the budget, it's very, of course, it's a simplification from me, but it basically works like this. They create some things that are attractive from, like, you know, they introduce some solutions that are very attractive from the PR perspective, like, hey, they are supporting families, they are supporting older people, they are supporting this group and this group, but it's all just giving away money in order to buy votes. They never support groups if they know that they don't have support from these groups anyway. So they just aim at the groups, you know, that can actually, that they know that there is high chance that these groups will vote for them. And also there are many very incompetent people up there who make very stupid decisions and who waste public money on just, you know, on their, just because of their incompetency or because of their greed, because they either steal the money or waste the money instead of making sure that our, you know, country budget is okay. And even if we face some difficulties, that we will be able to somehow make it as a whole. They did not. And now we are all facing consequences of that. And people are getting more and more angry. So I think this is one of the things that can happen, unfortunately, by the cost of everyone getting, you know, struggling, or many people struggling to make ends meet. But people are slowly starting to realize that this government is not the best option for the country. This is one of the things that is happening. What else must happen? I think some politicians would have to disappear one way or another from the political scene. I don't know, retire, whatever, step down. I don't want to say any names, but there are some politicians that would need to somehow step down from their functions. And I don't know. There is hope. I really see among like younger generations, younger people, that they have different way of thinking, and they look at world differently, and they expect different things. Which is good. During the Black protests in Poland, so the one for women's rights after the new abortion law was introduced, I saw many very young girls and boys as well at these protests, which really made me hopeful, because I think in the long run we need a generational change in the politics, but also among voters, to, you know, to change the situation. But I cannot tell you what exactly would have, like, would need to happen. I see some positive trends. I see also some bad things that can bring good results, like the economical situation, as I told you. But honestly, it's very complicated, and I'm not an expert on politics and economy to to come up with a solution.
Yes, but I mean, we cannot solve it, of course, and it's not our, I mean, we are musicians, you know, we can contribute in some ways maybe, but what you said in the end, I think, is very important, because what I think very often is, you know, we have I think the highest bet we can bet is to educate the next generations in a different way, and to show them, you know, that there's many different ways to go than this, So I think, you know, that's something we can bet our hopes on and work on too. And it
definitely
works. It works very fine with music. I think, you know, that's something we can, there's a, where we can make a little contribution. Since you talked about the connection between church and state in Poland, to anyone listening who's maybe interested, there's a great movie which is covering this topic in a great way, as I think, called Claire.
Yeah.
And I don't know, like when I watched it last year, it was available on Netflix. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah. In Germany, it's on Netflix. And I would recommend it to anyone who's interested in this because
yeah. It's quite heavy.
It's heavy, so yeah. I mean, it's a heavy topic.
It's good to prepare yourself in advance because it really touches some very difficult topics, like especially the problem of pedophilia in the church and different sorts of abuse. So it's definitely not a movie to watch lightly.
But it's a very good one.
It definitely tells a very important story and touches very important topics and also, yeah, I would recommend it as well, definitely.
Okay. Yeah, so, you know, maybe we move away from politics. And I would say, you know, if we are approaching the end of our conversation for today, I will now ask you 5 very short brief questions, and I would like to invite you to provide very short and brief answers to them.
I'll try. As you probably noticed, I'm not very good in providing brief answers, but I'll do my best.
Yeah, I mean, they can also, they don't have to necessarily be brief, but, you know, let's just try.
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Hit me.
Yeah, okay. Number 1, Božo Vrečo or Damir Imamović?
Damir Imamović.
Okay. All right.
It wasn't that difficult.
Okay.
Even though I really love Božo, especially from his older albums. And I'm grateful to him because thanks to him, I discovered Rail Street Orchestra. But I think Damir is by far my absolutely favorite musician and singer. So no one can actually compete with him.
All right, yeah. Okay, number 2. Burek or Cevapcici?
Burek, because I'm vegan. And you can make vegan burek, but you cannot make vegan Cevapcici.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I forgot about it.
No, it's fine.
I didn't think about it. Yes, but I mean, we have to know that actually in Bosnia, burek...
Yeah. In Bosnia, burek is always with meat. So
yeah. The other ones, the vegan ones are not called burek.
Yeah. I had vegan cevapcici once. Like they were made with some meat substitute and they were delicious. So I will go with vegan cevapcici.
All right. Okay. Number 3. Do you like disco polo?
I hate it. I absolutely hate it. I despise it.
Yeah, maybe for those who don't know, maybe you can briefly tell like what it is.
Okay, so disco
and why you don't like it.
Why I hate it. So disco polo is a very popular music genre in Poland. It's very popular, especially like on parties and. It's the kind of music that it's very simple. This is why people learn it very fast, because the melodies are very simple and the rhythm is simple, which is not a problem. I'm absolutely a fan of simplicity in music, but in disco polo, it's most of the people who make this music, they don't even, like, they cannot sing, they cannot play music, depreciate anyone as a musician, but most of the guys who do this music really have very little musical skills, I would say. And this music is very, so the lyrics are very obscene. They are usually about they usually bear some erotic content, but you know, this very bad kind of erotic content, because you can write lyrics that are full of erotic tension and they are beautiful and nice. But in disco polo, it's just very literal and very obscene and somehow, sometimes even disgusting. And it's this kind of music that if you listen to it long enough, it sort of washes your brain because it's very repetitive and it doesn't bring much content to think about. So it could literally wash your brain.
Yeah, I mean, it's similar to what we know as turbo folk in
yes,
Yugoslavia.
I would say disco polo is still worse than turbo folk. Maybe I like turbo folk more because of the, you know, foreign vibe.
You know, I would say they are pretty much alike, actually, because both are addressing, like, you know, the lowest instincts,
function, yes. And they are based on the same mechanisms. That's true. Yeah, definitely. So you can definitely... So disco polo is the Polish turbo folk, yes.
Don't listen to disco polo, if you ask us. Okay, number four. If you would be... at freedom to choose a place to live anywhere in the world, where would it be?
Either Belgrade or Sarajevo or Istanbul.
Okay. Very concrete.
Yes.
And not too far away. So number five, and the last one is, what is your biggest dream?
I think we already discussed it today. My biggest dream is to become a full-time musician and, you know, live from music and with music every day, and also be an independent musician that collaborates with musicians that I admire. That's my biggest dream.
All right. Like I said, very realistic one, actually. And so, you know, I would like to express the wish for you, for your dreams to become a reality when the time is right. Okay, so, yeah, what can I say? Thank you very much for being my guest today. It was really a huge pleasure, and I'm very happy to have you. And yeah, if you would like to share anything with our listeners, you know, the final words should belong to the guest, of course.
Thank you. First of all, thank you very much, Armin, for inviting me. And it was a huge pleasure. I really enjoyed our conversation. To share something with our listeners... Oh, this is quite a responsibility, I would say. if I can tell you something, listen to what Armin said today about following your dreams and staying true to yourself and dreaming big, because these are wise words from a wise man, and I can only double on that, and I will take it as a message with me today, and I encourage all of you to do that too.
Yeah, okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Have a nice evening.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
You have been listening to Talking Spirits Podcast, episode number 30, with Armin Alic and Julia Zions. If you happen to be into music from the Balkans, please check out Krivadrina's debut album Ashdaba. You will definitely like it. You can support the Talking Spirits podcast by sending PayPal donations to info@talkingspiritspodcast.com. As we speak, I'm already on tour with Henrik Freischlader and will be on tour for the next couple weeks. For this reason, most probably the next episode won't be released before November. If you feel like hooking up with me in real life, please check out the tour dates at www.henrikfreischlader.com and feel free to join us at a show close to you. As always, you can also reach out to me by writing a mail to info@talkingspiritspodcast.com, or you can also contact me on Facebook or Instagram. I'm always looking forward to seeing you and hearing from you. Have a nice day. Bye-bye.